pale horse. The man who sat on him was death.
And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of Declarations of War, episode 167, and it took us this long to get smug. I am your host, Alexei Avkar, joined by my co-hosts, Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
And Levitain. Ha ha!
Good evening, everyone.
I got it. Our special guest for this evening's show is Boom Boom Longtime.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I'm always quite embarrassed when I hear that name, given it was a character I never really set out to make, but now the character's become really quite close to my heart, so I really appreciate being here, and it's good to hear your voice again, Alec. I've not heard it for a number of years.
Yeah, and I haven't heard yours since you're in NA, maybe even before that. For context, audience, and we're going to try a little bit of a format change where the shoutouts are a bit later in the show. We're going to jump right into our top stories here. Boom Boom has been in Cafe Noir for, I don't know, almost as long as I can remember, really.
Probably about 9 years now or something. I mean, I've played Eve for 10 years. It was Taram Kildar or whatever that I was in a court with, and then that was kind of the Noir connection. So funnily enough, when I came into Noir Academy, that was when basically, because yourself and Nadir were basically the classes where you said, look, when we're going to be PvPing, you need to set up mechanisms to make money. And that's when I thought, well, I should really start a market trader. And that's kind of where the character of Boom came about, basically.
So peel back the mystery, okay? What happened to you after Noir Academy? Where did you go? What did you do? Who is Boom Boom Longtime?
Well, the funny thing is, I mean, when I first started playing Eve, I kind of fell into the trap with the first 2 years. I did PvE, basically level 4 missions, in the ass end of nowhere, basically. And I guess I kind of stuck with the game because I never really had anything better to do at the time. And there was some sort of feel I got for the game. And then obviously, when you get drawn to the forums and people try and tell you this is what you should do. And I started obviously considering PvP. It was around about the time when there was something that caught me about Taram Kildar having the Royal Black Watch Highlanders being a Scottish sort of theme. So I joined them, but then they were obviously in Nilsec at the time and I didn't really move out there. But I still remember the first opportunity where you had asked for some of their guys if we could come and help in a wormhole up, which I remember I did join. Totally noob, I had my overview not set up right and stuff like that. And yeah, I came along and I kind of loved it and I thought, I want more of this. And that's then what kind of prompted me to start getting, to join Noir Academy and start learning PvP.
Where did you go after the Academy? What was next for you?
Well, obviously I progressed into Noir. I remember Nadir leaving on the day that I graduated, because I still remember the quote, he was an asshole, but he was our asshole, which I've actually used again in the context of people I've further flown with. But I was in Noir for about a year, really good memories. But basically at the same time on Boom, I'd been in a crime and punishment channel, which was basically, from the forums, and Helicity Boson was one of the people that was there, and that character was posting, battle reports of really fun fights, what looked like really fun fights where, a certain group called Shadow Cartel were kind of fighting outnumbered and just doing sort of great things. So I kind of asked Wowbagger at the time if I could come and fly at them on my character, which I'd never really used. He probably should have said no, but he didn't. And I've flown with them now for, I don't know, 7 years. So it's been really good memories. I mean, a lot's changed in Lowsec, but I did have a home in Noir, but Shadow Cartel was always, I don't know, it was one of those things.
Yeah, I mean, you find your home, you find your home. Speaking of Lowsec, we've had Lave kind of weigh in on this as well. How do you think Lowsec has changed from when you first got into it to where things are now?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly more stagnant. I used to remember you would get a lot more Roman groups coming through. You would get a lot more reactive pings. It's like, let's quickly form. We've got a group of 50 randoms to fight. It's just, it's not as vibrant now. But then, you know, at the same time, neither's Eve. You know, I mean, I think everybody in Eve would probably love to see back to the day when we had 65,000 people online. You know, the more people online, the more people in the sandbox, the more emergent gameplay, the more different things can happen. I think now it's definitely a bit more stagnant. And certainly, you know, in terms of Shadow Cartel, I mean, just can't compete with Snuff now. That's the reality. But, you know, Snuff will talk about how they chose to evolve and how Shadow Cartel chose to evolve. But just in general, it's got its moments, but it's not like it used to be 2, 3, 4 years ago.
How do you see the Snuff Shadow Cartel dynamic now? Like, is there still the rivalry there, or do you feel like they're moving out to NullSec and, like you said, evolving a little bit has kind of taken them out of your narrative as an organization?
There's still the rivalry. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, back in the day when we used to form to fight Snuff and we were kind of almost fighting on equal terms, I mean, they always kind of had a bit more supers that they could drop. I never used to like forming to fight them because you weren't guaranteed to win. But just now, fighting them's not really an option. It's the only way it's possible to fight them is if they decide not to commit, you know, fully, which in many regards isn't conducive to how people want to play. The example is last week when we basically formed to go and fight an Asbel. Snuff had came along on their own back, and everybody that turned up to defend or attack basically chose not to do anything but to basically force Snuff to go home. And that's kind of, I would say that probably sums up everything as it is, you know, the current dynamic. But, you know, Snuff do their own thing. Obviously, they were flying with goons, they built up their titans. You know, now they're just, nobody can really oppose them. In LoSec, anyway.
What groups do you think are on your level now? Or what groups are you looking at that are kind of up-and-comers in LoSec?
Well, it's one of those things, because obviously what I just said is a bit hypocritical, and that, to be honest, as an entity, we've always still dropped on groups that have less numbers than us over the time. I mean, it's one of those things. Who's emergent in LoSec? Who's don't really think there are any other exciting new sort of entities out there that are bursting onto the scene are going to create new content. I mean, when I first started flying with Shadow Cartel, you know, there were suddenly spaceships, there was Snuffbox, there was, did he say jump? You know, there were so many entities that, you know, on their day could hold their own and was thrown into the mix. Just at the minute, I just don't really see any other groups out there. I mean, you know, the joke Shadow Cartel have is that we're a dead alliance. But, you know, the other, last week, that day when we did join together with other groups, there was 100 in Fleet and Dead Terrorists were there as well, who were an ally from a long time ago. So, you know, again, it's one of those things that you kind of pine for the old days. And, you know, LoSec's not quite dead yet, but it's very, very stagnant, I believe, in its current capacity.
Do you think its stagnation has to do with the stagnation of faction warfare? Or is it like, because piracy itself benefited from faction warfare being active, right? Because they're targets for you. But you guys also had fights and content elsewhere. Do you think that faction warfare drying up sort of led groups to leave, even though there's still activities elsewhere? Or what's the interplay between being like Shadow Cartel being pirates and faction warfare dying out?
Well, you know, I mean, looking back at some of the fights we've had over the years, you know, there weren't huge amounts of times where we were ever actively engaged faction warfare on a large scale, perhaps because they wouldn't have fought us, because, you know, we were always upscaling the ships that we'd fly, whereas their doctrines were always, you know, smaller, more reactive, hit-and-run kind of stuff for capturing the system. So, you know, even going back to 2013-14, it wasn't really them that we had major conflicts with. It was obviously the other sort of entities. And, you know, back in the day as well, I mean, we would sort of roam into NullSec as well and stuff. I mean, just, I think what I'm saying in terms of LoSec, I might be wrong in saying so, but you could argue throughout the game there's a bit of stagnation in that, you know, the less players that play, the less content there is in the sandbox. That's just personally what I've felt. I mean, these days, you know, in days gone by, you would get 2 or 3, 4 reactive pings. Look, there's a fleet to fight, form. And even when Doomed and Chiller was in Shadow Cartel, you know, and I was staying up to join this fleet because I was quite enjoying flying with them. There was always stuff to do. There was always things to do. And now it's almost like you're resigned to the scheduled ops, which kind of still revolve a bit around timers. There's just not enough. You know, it just seems like the heart's kind of gone out of it, I feel. But it's still the game that we all know and love, you know, deep down.
No, I do hear it. It does feel like the game is much more timer-oriented than it ever used to be. And I don't know, I guess that's good for some people and not less good for other people.
Didn't like a massive contract content driver back in the day was Moongo and the old moon mining pauses. And those were certainly timer-based.
But they were more variable. Like, you would hit the moon, you didn't necessarily know what time was going to come out. You could guess, and the opposing team could, like, time their strat, but it was a little less static. Now, like, if you know what an alliance's defense timer is, and you hit them, like, you know around when it's going to be, and, you know, if you can't match their numbers in that time zone, it's kind of like, well, why even initiate that content in the first place if you know it's not going to end well?
I'm glad you mentioned the time zone thing, because Snuff is, as far as I can tell, mostly an EUTZ group. They've got solid numbers in USTZ, just because that's sort of what happens when a group gets large. You eventually pick up people from USTZ as well. Shadow Cartel, also mainly EUTZ from what I can tell. Do you guys have a big USTZ contingent?
Well, the funny joke with the US time zone thing is that Shadow Cartel loses its time zone roughly every about 2 years. When Doom Chinchilla, he left, that was an example. There were other corps that left recently. So there really isn't a US time zone at the minute. There has been in the past, but anytime there seems to be, it kind of resets, you know, two years later when they choose to leave. So, back in the day when I was playing and I wasn't working, I would quite actively, you know, play with the US time zone because there was one, but these days there isn't really.
Were there other US time zone groups, or even AU time zone groups for that matter, in the past, or was it always just like LOSEC is an EU time zone centric area of space?
Well, you know, I mean, Immortalis, which is the main corp, they were always EU, so it's always really been that focus. Unless there's, you know, a specific op. I mean, the time when we did anchor the Keepster, I wasn't able to make that, but I believe that was around about 2 o'clock in the morning. That was the, you know, super show, and I think there were about 200 people from Shadow Cartel there, which is the most that were ever in a fleet, I believe. But, you know, sadly, I've missed that.
Do you have a future for Boom Boom? What are your personal goals? Any, what's left for you?
Well, in many regards, in terms of Boom, as a character, I mean, there's a bit of a monstrosity in that I never set out to make the character. And in many regards, the character's indicative of me, you know, playing Eve, having a few glasses of wine, and just having a laugh. You know, obviously, the character still provides the financial backbone for me. You know, obviously, I know I've been known for some sinister things in the past. You know, not everybody agrees with some of the things I've done. I mean, I've always kept that separate from, obviously, my flying characters. And, you know, now a lot of people don't really know the connection between my flying characters and that character. But, you know, I don't know. With the fact that I never set out to do anything, you know, I guess I did become a wee bit infamous. It's still quite nice logging onto Amar, you know, and I'll get people coming, you know, they'll log in that they haven't been Amar for months or years, and they'll say, wow, nice to see you here, things never change, keep up or whatever. But these days I really don't say that much in local. I just log on, update my orders. I mean, Boom is ultimately my social character. It's the character that where I kind of found myself in the EVE community, and that through that character I was able to branch out into the game and kind of start doing what I would like to do. And I just enjoy being social. You know, it's quite fun sometimes having a few glasses of wine and just talking nonsense and I'm our local. But these days I really actually don't use the character that much, and I certainly in terms of nefarious activities don't really actually do that much. Well, last year hardly anything at all. I mean, one of the big sort of things in EVE was, obviously we all remember, the Erotica One sort of scandal. What I'm actually quite proud of is there were a number of people who still to this day say, Boom, thanks for telling me to stay away from this, you know, like, because Erotic One had a way of drawing everybody in and inviting people to the bonus rooms. And of course, if you were invited there, then you're obviously guilty by attendance. And I was like, look, you know, he's crossing the line here, guys, just stay away. So I was quite proud of myself for that. And I've always known the real difference between right and wrong. Yeah, I've done a lot of nasty things to some people. But when I say that, you know, there's a difference between, you know, taking ISK. Is there any real difference between taking ISK of somebody in a misleading manner or blowing up their shit? In both regards, they're both non-consensual. So, you know, I, again, one of those things, it's like, I never set myself any targets at Boom's, for Boom. I just enjoyed having fun on that character. And I have done. And just even things like, you know, being in the Monaco clubhouse and there's still people like Toru Bushido there and stuff like that. I just enjoy some of the social aspects of the character. In terms of my flying characters, I mean, on the back, having been in Noir, I still adhere to a lot of the principles that you guys taught me. I still try and be the most efficient I can be. I recently passed 10k kills for the corp, which I was immensely proud of. And I need to try and get lonely past 10k, but I'm not there yet. But yeah, I mean, that's just a bit about me. I mean, a lot of the principles I still play with this game, separate to Boom Boom. You know, obviously yourself and Nidia kind of imprinted into me when I was going through NA.
So congrats on that 10k kill mark, man. That's cool.
If I'm following this correctly, you have become a semi-infamous, or in the past, you were a semi-infamous Amar scammer, Amar local scanner. What is your biggest score? Like, come on, give us some stories of this.
Yeah, like, what's the worst thing you've done?
Well, I mean, you know, back, it was probably 2013, 2014, but I was doing it the most. I mean, you know, the bounty scam was obviously the sort of one where I guess it became synonymous with, where, you know, was obviously offering to split my bounty, which I don't know, 65 billion or whatever at the minute, 50-50. And what was quite funny was, I mean, when you look at when CCP released the statistics every year of how many people had you sort of blocked, how many mails you got, the stats for 2013-14 are actually generally quite funny. And I was getting convos, 10, 15, 20 convos every day. I was getting about 5 different mails because, of course, I was appearing on the bounty board, which was appearing on the billboards, which meant that they didn't need to be in a MAR. So a lot of the actual conversation requests I got were from people without not in a MAR. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of if I was to put a generic, how much have I probably liberated from people over the years, it's probably about 150 to 200 billion, which I suppose if you look over the course of 5, 6, 7, 8 years, maybe isn't that much. But then I was always station trading to begin with. I mean, one of my biggest sort of achievements, I had 3 convos. It was actually 4 convos open at one time for 800 million. 3 of them basically sent 800 million, the 4th backed out. So it's like 2.4 billion. Am I getting my maths right? No, 3.2 billion for, you know, literally 15 minutes work. And did I feel guilty? Yes, no, but you know, it's still cognitive PvP as I saw it. And again, you know, I'm almost quite embarrassed sometimes being associated with Boom because it's not the real me. I'm a nice person, but Eve as it is what it is, you know.
And yeah, again, of course.
I say, looking back, you know, I know the difference between right and wrong. What Erotica One, you know, getting somebody to sing a song, or you know, if you're ransomed, that's fine, but you know, go and sort of get someone on comms for 40 minutes to recite code stuff like that, it's crossing the line.
So coming into the show, okay. I had no idea who in the world Boom was. As it turns out, you're like an old veteran player who is not only like a low-sec pirate for years and was an old-school noir bro, but you're also an infamous like Amar local scammer. I am happy we had you on the show now because this has been super fun.
The thing is that it's always, you know, I always wanted to keep the separation, but that is what, I mean, I always remember when I went through Noir Academy, and I remember the first night of joining, and it was movie night with Nidia and Alex. And, you know, they were like, basically, look, it's all right to scam, but just don't do it with a Noir character. And, you know, obviously I adhered to that principle, and it's like one of those things. I know some people listening to this will say scam is abhorrent, it's awful, but, you know,
Scamming is Eve. Yeah, scamming is Eve. We need more bad guys in Eve. Eve is too docile now. Everybody's friendly with everybody.
Yeah, I mean, some of the funnest nights, I mean, like I say, literally, for several years, I haven't really actively been active on my character other than trading, but I've had so much fun sometimes just literally logging on that character. I even remember I went to Jita one night because I had to go and pick something up that I couldn't use my other characters for. And, you know, I just, you know, they say the wall of spam in Jita, you can't do it, but I tried to put more distinctive element and just put my character. I was offering octuple 100 ISK, 100 million ISK, so I was offering people 800 million. And I don't know, I made like 900 million in about 45 minutes. And it was just the banter. It's like, maybe it's a Scottish thing. I just enjoy having a couple of glasses of wine, talking nonsense in local and seeing what I can do. So it's one of those things. I love the game. I loved the game when it was more cutthroat. I feel CCP have been watering down the game for years and years. Maybe some things have been positive, maybe some things haven't. But, you know, I like the fact if you got podded, you lost skill points if you hadn't updated your clone. Things that made the game dangerous, I just think now the game's a lot more user-friendly. But, of course, as a business model, I don't disagree with why CCP would pursue that.
Well, the alternative argument could be that the PCU keeps going down the more they do it. So are they actually helping or hurting?
Even like going on Safari used to be a huge thing when I initially joined the game. I remember it actually got, I was reminded of it because I'm a big fan of Overwatch and I follow the Overwatch League pretty closely. And an old Spectre Fleet like organizer named Jane Fillion is now a head coach of an Overwatch League team, or pardon me, an assistant coach of an Overwatch League team. And so on the Overwatch subreddit, it was linked a video that he did for CCP's, one of their marketing campaigns, where it's like, tell a story, tell your Eve story. And he was telling a story where he wanted to join a pirate group. And before they would let him in, they had him go and join an industrial group and like become friends with these guys. And then after he was in this court for a little bit, he earned their trust. He came out in a tackle ship while they were in a mining op and then brought all of his pirates friends in and just wiped the floor with them. But like that is something that you can't do because of CCP introduced, what was it called? Friendly fire for corporations. It's turned off. You can't do it anymore. So like if you wanted to get some pirates and war deck a HiSec Corp, put somebody in and go on Safari or whatever, you can't. Like, it is mechanically not possible anymore to do some of the stuff you could do in the past.
Yeah, I mean, one of the examples is I actually did create a character where I was going to try and infiltrate a corp and AWOX them. And I was kind of influenced by people like Psychotic Monk, stuff like that I'd seen in a channel, Belligerent Undesirables, which I don't know if it's still on any given channel, but I thought I wanted to do that. And do you actually know the funny thing is, when the character was ready to do it, I thought, I can't actually do this because separating from myself from Boom, you know, if I'm in Amar Local, I'm quite happy to do things, you know, via the chat system. But once I actually get on voice, I believe I'm the right, you know, my own person or the real person. So I couldn't have joined a court with a view to then do it. But yeah, I agree. I mean, Eve was a lot, when Eve was more dangerous, there were more people playing. So I think you can clearly draw comparisons to the game being watered down and people, less people playing. But I do believe Plex prices being higher obviously contributes to that, because if Plex was 800 million, again, how many people would sub their second or their third alts that they've now got unsubbed because of the price? I don't know. It's...
I got a question for you. Why Amar and not Jita? For your market trading specifically.
There was no real reason. Just I thought that Jita would be more cutthroat. Again, one of the things as well is when I actually started Boom, I was a bit naive still to the game. The game hadn't opened up to me at that point. You know, again, I'd been doing my Backwater level fours for 2 years. No real exposure to the wider game. You kind of, as a new player, unless you actually get that feel to reach out to the community, I feel you're kept in the bubble. So for me, it was... I was aware of Jita, but I thought Amar would probably be a better sort of learning place. And funnily enough, actually, Spaceship Barbie, who, you know, was a scammer there at the time, that character actually quite influenced me. So, yeah, I mean, there was no real reason over Jita other than that I didn't have a huge amount of money to throw into the pot to begin with, and I thought, you know, Ma would be a better place to start rather than, you know, Jita. And I think I would probably never have been able to imprint my personality as I feel I've done over that local had I gone to Jita, because, of course, you know, it's bot central. But
yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, definitely in terms of the social aspect, when you talk in a Mar local, it's a lot more noticeable. You can actually have a conversation there as opposed to Jita local.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I would say about EVE is it is the community that makes the game. It isn't, you know, the game itself. I mean, there are so many highs and lows that this game can deliver. I mean, everybody knows what it's like, the adrenaline when you've just had a pulsating fight, you've won, you realise you're getting back home to the station and the killboard starts looking great. I mean, there are very other few games that can compete with this. I've tried playing other games and, you know, EVE always is this game that, you know, it is immersive and the community is fantastic.
Well, speaking of the fantastic community, let's transition to our next top story. Oh my goodness. Says Vin, such a long time coming, and it would not have been possible without community support. The Black Market. You may have seen it on Reddit, you may have heard it on Talking in Stations, we're bringing it to Declarations of War, we're doing a deep dive on the launching of what I think Talking Stations coined the phrase, the Hostile Freeport, which I love. The Hostile Freeport in 9UI, anchored by yours truly, and Artemis Albosa, and Conventia, also of Noir fame, who's now a member of the Capitalist Army. The three of us went in, we managed to pull this off. Art, with his very daring workable deployment last week. Holy shit. And then finally the anchoring, and I gotta give shoutouts to Faulty and everybody in Tactical Voltage, Tactical Wattage. What are they? Wattage or Voltage?
So the Reddit post said Wattage, but I think it's supposed to be Voltage, and the guy just like mispronounced it or something, because Wattage makes no sense, because the other alliance in Tactical Wattage, right? There's Tactical Supremacy, which is where you get tactical, but then there's Dangerous Voltage.
But there's also the Watchmen.
Okay, you're on to something here.
Well, regardless, they are awesome. So let's talk about this. What it is, the Hostile Market Freeport in the heart of Providence, the nexus of Providence, one of EVE's most storied PvP regions. We're probably most storied regions, period, really. Very pivotal in EVE history, very famous. And we have the Market Hub. It is the only Market Hub in Providence that can be accessed by people that are not on, excuse me, that are on CVA's rather voluminous kill on site list. And yeah, it's right down in the HQ, basically. So if you're roaming around Pravi and you die and you need a new ship, you're going to be able to go there and get it. If you run out of nanite paste, you're going to be able to go there and get it. If you do a ton of bomb runs and need a place to resupply, you now have that. Are you getting chased by Pravi and need a place to dock up? You've got that now. Do you want to roam Providence without having to worry about going in and out of the bubbled entry systems? You have that now. You can put a jump clone there.
Do you want to blobs from a citadel with fantastic range for Pravi? You have that now.
Mm-hmm. Black Ops range all over Pravi, except for like two or three systems, I think, and you also get a bit of catch in there as well.
Also, is nanite paste too expensive for you now? Now you get free repair.
Very true, very true. So don't talk about the free stuff. We want them to buy the paste. So let's talk about what went into this. This is something that I've been wanting to do for at least a decade. We have had space in Providence before, we as a Noir, back in 2010. But it was more like a farming pocket. It wasn't really the central trade hub system that I was really hoping to get. Not that that was really on the table, but that's what I always wanted. And, you know, there are a couple options to get something like this in other places. You know, we kind of have something like that in NTAC 6, but Great Wildlands is kind of like in the middle of nowhere. We really have to build that up from scratch. 9 UI was always to me the crown jewel. Like, there's BKG up in Branch, which could also have worked. It's very similar in terms of geography. But 9 UI was the one. It had the history, it had the location. Providence was a great region to roam around in. Provi Block were always good opponents. There were lots of other small gang alliances that came in there to fight Provi, and you could also fight them while you were roaming around. It was the destination. So, my new philosophy for EVE in the past 2-3 years has been, well, now's the time to not hold anything back, because who knows where the game is going to go shortly. So play it like the server is shutting down. Don't hold back. So I was like, all right, we've got this NTAC 6 thing. I've kind of like have a case study that I can take to other alliances and be like, look, what we've been able to do here, we could do that for your region. Or if you want to fuck with somebody, a neighboring region that you don't like, just help provide us security. And so around about end of November, beginning of December, I started shopping that around. This is essentially as we were starting up our new alliance, the network, which was literally the day Noir was shutting down. And I mention that because getting this trade hub set up was pretty much Noir's dream. So I was launching what would become the vehicle to realize it as Noir itself was closing its doors and announcing to members that, you know, it's time to end things for now. So this whole thing was, to me, will always be tied up in that. So I start shopping around to the different regions that this could work, and one of them was Provi. Now, I know Provi Block is never, and I mean never, going to be okay with a Fortizar in 9 UI that other people can dock in that they don't like. That's never going to be a thing. So I didn't even bother talking to them, but I did talk to other people around them. And sure enough, Tactical Supremacy was like, oh man. Specifically Faulty. He and I have known each other for a while. We've met before. I've always really wanted to work with him, and I think he's always really wanted to work with me, like actually in space doing some stuff. And once I pitched him the idea and where it could go, he was like, oh, this is hilarious. This is going to be great. We can do this. And I was a little like, he wasn't the biggest alliance, Tactical Supremacy, but you know, they're very time zone concentrated, and they're very good PvPers. So I was like, all right, if you think we can beat Provi in the Australian time zone, let's make our whole strategy around deploying it in the Australian time zone, defending it in the Australian time zone. Let's do this. Because you know, Provi can field like 400 plus people at EU. So if, you know, there's not too many alliances that can match them on that. I guess there are like coalition level dudes, but in the Australian time zone, much more manageable. So I was like, all right, I think this could work. This could work. Artemis, talk about the drop op, because that was really your thing. I put a campaign out for our alliance. We picked a day that we were going to do this. Campaign came out for the alliance, tried to move everybody down into the area and get them used to being in and around Provi. Didn't tell anybody that we were actually doing the drop until we did it. Art, walk through what that drop was like.
So, like, first of all, we should mention the difficulties of dropping a structure in a hostile system, right? So when it anchors, when it first launches, CCP changed it, I guess it was like 6 months to a year ago, where it is vulnerable. They changed it when moon mining came out so that you couldn't yoink somebody's moons by dropping an Afnor first. So when it first anchors, it is vulnerable for 15 minutes. And you have to protect it. Furthermore, a Fortizar is 80,000 M3, which means you can't just roll in there with a DST, be super like in and out real quick, no worries. And so you have to use, there are four options essentially. You can use an Orca, a Rorqual, a Freighter, or a Jump Freighter. An Orca or a Freighter, you'd have to gate in or bridge in, but we didn't have access to a Bridging Titan, which left us with a Jump Freighter or a Rorqual. I could do both of those. But one of them sounded a whole lot more fun than the other one. Plus, it could kind of defend itself. So we chose the Rorqual option. And so what we had to do is Alec found, he called it the perfect spot, because it was a bookmark that he had, which is essentially a deep safe within the center of 9 UI. I think it's within D-scan range, just barely of one planet.
Yeah, and it's so, D-scan of barely of one planet, and it's like 20 AU away from everything else. And I like it because it's not exactly, but it's effectively equidistant from all the gates, which is one of my favorite parts about it.
So we had the spot picked out. We knew we were going to use Auroraquil, but then you have to realize that even though Pravi is weaker in the AUTZ, they're still not non-existent, right? You're going to have 40 to 50 people bopping around 9 UI from Pravi block alone in AUTZ. Not to mention the fact that you've also got Wrecking Crew and HTP and various other third parties which are roaming around Providence on a regular basis and which will cap hunt and try and kill you. So what we decided to do is take advantage of a few things specific to the Auroraquil and do the old suicide sino trick. Well, I actually didn't do the suicide sino trick because I'm an imbecile. So I went in with the intention of lighting a sino and then killing it immediately with the Auroraquil. But then Alec reminded me, hey, you don't want your Auroraquil sitting out there in a safe that anybody can warp to because you just anchored a Fortizar that you can't tether to, and you're not cloaked. So I had to fit a cloak, which meant it took me literally like 40 seconds to lock up my sino and shoot it. And that entire time, I was sitting there with freaking sweaty palms, just watching the timer click down, trying to kill my sino, noting at any moment, someone could just warp in, tackle me, and I'm dead, and our Fortizar is dead, and this project is down the drain. So we do that, we anchor the Fortizar, and then it's a matter of getting safe, cloaking up, and I was also the in-sino because we had Faulty and his crew on standby. Because remember, you still have to defend your Fortizar for 15 minutes when it launches, and there are any number of groups who could just happen by and kill it. So I am JD away, I cloak using the mobile micro-jump units, because the Auroraquil is the only capital ship which can use them, because it has less than 1 million... kilograms of mass, 1 billion, whatever the limit is. In any case, it's OP. It is legitimately broken, but it's fun to use. So we're there, we're cloaked up, palms are sweaty, waiting for 15 minutes, and it anchors. But we do one thing. Actually, Alec, I think, does it either on purpose or on accident. He leaves a bubble anchored at the spot where the Fortizar is. And so we're just sitting there one day, and I see a bubble kill mill show up on our kill board. And this entire time, we're having no idea whether Pravi has noticed the Fortizar yet, right? Because most alliances, you anchor something in their space, it's not going to be long before they notice. But we're talking about Pravi here, and Pravi is full of citadels and not full of attentive people relative to other alliances. No offense, Pravi, but...
So I don't know when exactly Pravi... So with the bubble, it was intentional. My thought was that if I put the bubble down, like, it would buy Artemis maybe more time. I had it arranged to, like, pull from the Keepstar so that if someone did try to warp in on him, they would pop out, like, outside of point range and he could get away. That was the theory. It actually kind of worked as a canary in the coal mine kind of thing of, like, when did Pravi notice it? Because, of course, they would blow up the bubble, but I hadn't planned that part. According to Rocket X, HTP noticed almost immediately, like while the Rourke was still on field, but Pravi did not for some time after. I think they did realize during the timer, but not nearly with enough time to do anything about it. So they were relatively on it, I would say, but again, could not form in time to stop the online timer. Again, it's only 15 minutes, which in Eve time to like get a fleet together and get out in space is not that much time. Like, I mean, yeah, it is their home system, but to, like, A, find out what's going on, and then B, like, oh shit, hey, can we get an FC? And then that FC to, like, form a fleet. 15 minutes is a short window.
And that's one of the reasons I liked the idea of using the Rourke, right? Because with the Rourke there, if I'm an FC, and I see there's a hostile structure anchoring in my system, and I think that I have a chance of forming a fleet to go kill it, immediately, I'm pinging for bombers. I'm saying, let's get 5-6 bombers shooting torps at this thing just to pause the timer. They're not going to kill it on their own, but they can be super slippery, right? So if anything's sitting there trying to defend the thing, they can cloak up, warp to a different spot on the structure, preferably out of range of whatever's attacking them, and keep shooting. And it'll just keep the timer paused while we form up the rest of the fleet. But the Rorqual, with the sentries and with the mobile micro-jump units, is mobile enough to stop that sort of thing. Plus, I mean, we also had Faulty and crew on Batphone, just in case.
Yeah, but it was actually kind of cool that we didn't need them, because I don't think Pravi knew that they were really helping us at that time. We did keep it fairly under wraps. I don't even think Faulty told his fleet what necessarily they were formed up for when we dropped it.
Yeah, he didn't.
And we never had to bring him on field, so like we really kept that card close to the chest.
The thing is, it's these kind of stories that make the game what it is, because, you know, like Artemis was saying with the sweaty palms, you know, the sense of satisfaction when you complete what you'd planned to do versus obviously how it goes if it goes wrong. I mean, that's what I love about EVE, is it is still the game it is to a degree. And, it, you know, when things go right, they go right. When things go wrong, it's almost heartbreaking because you're losing physical assets or things that you had to spend ISK to obtain.
Yeah, and Fortizars are not cheap. I don't know what the audience's familiarity with them is, but it is, you know, you're talking, I mean, you could get them on the cheap side, but it's basically like a 15, 20 bill investment, and then the fits on top of that. It's not nothing.
It's also worth mentioning the importance of the element of surprise here, right? So if Pravi knows that we're trying to anchor a hostile Fortizar in 9 UI, it's going to be a lot more difficult to anchor a hostile Fortizar in 9 UI. So if the first one failed, every subsequent attempt becomes just exponentially more difficult. So in my honest opinion, this was, if it didn't happen on the first try, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think that was fair. And that was kind of the feedback that I got from Night Jester, as well as my director. He was like, look, Alec, you could drop, I don't think you should drop this, he's pretty much told me. But, you know, if you do, don't plan to do it twice, because if it didn't work the first time, it's definitely not going to work that second time. And I think that's fair.
So this was do or die situation. We got it anchored down. And in systems where it's sovereignty, if you do not hold sovereignty in the system, then the anchor time for any of your structures is lengthened based on the strategic index for that system. And the strategic index is determined by how long the alliance has held sovereignty in that system. Now, 9UI has been held by Pravi for long enough that their strategic index was at level 5, which meant that added 5 extra days of anchoring time. So Pravi had it was 6 total, right? So you have the 24 hours default for the Fortizar plus 5 from the strategic index. So probably had 6 days where they found this thing and they can plan enough to kill it. And then we come to the day where we have to defend it. Alec, you want to walk us through what happened there?
Ooh, yeah, so it all came down to this. We were aware that CVA had lots of options. Diplomatically, I worked very hard to minimize those options ahead of time. So I was fairly confident, but not 100% sure that they wouldn't get any kind of like weird outside help. So I knew it was just going to be Pravi block. I wasn't totally sure how much they could field versus what Tickle could field. I had an idea it was generally a little bit more, but there was also the element of this was CVA sovereignty. If they wanted to, they could install a Sinojammer, which they did the night of. Now, this, again, was not totally unexpected, but it was kind of the, maybe not the worst-case scenario, but pretty fucking close to the worst-case scenario. So the Sinojammer goes down a few hours ahead of our timer beginning. At the end of the anchoring timer, there's going to be another 15 minutes that they can shoot it during. And I'm like, okay. So I'm talking to Faulty, and I'm like, look, they got the jammer up. You know, how are we going to work this? And he's like, oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'm like, I'm kind of a little worried about it. But, you know, he had a plan. It was a good plan. It was a ballsy plan, matter of fact. So the obvious solution to the Sinojammer is, well, just jump through the gates.
That's easier said
than done when you're dealing with capitals and super capitals, because they are so big and unwieldy and vulnerable.
So a lot of why to the Sino Jammer is shoot the Sino Jammer. The obvious solution to the Sino Jammer is suit the Sino Jammer. The ballsy solution to the Sino Jammer is take a freaking super capital fleet through the gates. Okay, let's. There's a distinguishment there that needs to be made.
So yes, you could disable the Sino Jammers at a time. The issue with that was it was on the grid with the Keepstar, and Faulty was not confident he could do that with just the subcaps and dealing with the Keepstar and dealing with Pravi's fleet. So, we made the plans to go through the gate. Now, most NullSec alliances will not do this, but Tactical Voltage got some balls. So, they put their fleet through on one side of the Sino Jam system and then jumped it all through the gate and then aligned it to the Fortizar. Now, Pravi had been showing Caracals and Cerberuses. They've been undocking them, moving them around, etc. When the actual fight came, they came out in Carriers and Max, which is a much stronger fleet type. They warped it all to the Fortizar grid, started shooting. Faulty had arranged interdictors ahead of time in the area. I think HTP provided that, if I'm remembering correctly, but I could be wrong. If I got the allegiance of the interdictor pilots wrong, I apologize. You guys were clutch. As Faulty was aligning the Tactical Voltage super capitals, they basically blew up all the bubbles except for one. As we were blowing up the last bubble, the Dictors decloaked and got the Pravi fleet bubbled. Our guys warp over, super caps first, followed by everybody else shortly after. We land, I think, about 100 off. Titans immediately DD carriers, and there were just so many, I thought it was an area of effect DD or something. The carriers just instantly vaporized. I couldn't even get on most of the males. I was there in my own carrier. A lot of the Macs escaped. I think a handful of carriers escaped. But we did manage to kill about 47 billion in Providence stuff and saved the station with about 5 minutes left, maybe a little less than 5 minutes. And I think it had 25% structure left when we finally landed, but the fight itself was over so quickly. I mean, it couldn't have been more than 5 minutes long that we were shooting them. And that includes the cleanup time. It was something else. I've never seen such a one-sided fight at that scale. I'm sure it happens all the time, but like me personally participating in it, have not seen that. And then the next hairy thing was we had to get the jump freighter through. It was really the only way to like get the Fortizar properly equipped and fueled so it wasn't in a vulnerable state. And so we had the Tactical Wattage subcap fleet sitting on the gate escorting a jump freighter through a NullSec gate with an active enemy fleet in the system, which is hair-raising as hell. But it got to the Citadel no problems. I slapped all the guns on, turned everything on, turned the services on, and it was good. We were safe. And I was like, whew, okay. We did it.
The craziest part to me was when, so the first thing Faulty did, or Tactical Wattage did, is they brought their subcap fleet through 7QTAC. And at this point, Pravi had like anchored bubbles on all of the gates. And so when they brought the subcap fleet through 7Q, they of course killed all those anchored bubbles. And after they warped the subcap fleet off and onto the Fortizar grid, this is before any of the supers or carriers had come in, Pravi warped, no joke, 15 to 20 Dictors and Hicks over and just started perma-bubbling and camping the 7Q gate. So the entire time we're sitting there over in the other system, moving the entire super capital and capital fleet, Pravi has 15 to 20 Dictors, one jump out, just sitting there camping the gate of an empty system. But they were still there even when we were moving the jump freighter through. They were still camping 7Q. So this entire time, at any point, if Pravi had noticed, hey, there's a super capital fleet or there's a jump freighter and they wanted to try and kill it, they had a wealth of opportunity to do so with this ball of Dictors and Hicks. But fortunately, they didn't.
Very fortunately. Considering.
I think one of the most exciting things about the game, though, is the evolving nature of a fight that's happening, because you really don't know how things are going to change and when they do change and how you react to them. And it's just the unpredictability of fights in EVE are what makes the game as it is.
Well, it's glorious to hear about. I mean, in this case, your friends basically put their biggest cards on the table, and Providence had no answer, and that's testament to the organization you did there. It's, as an ex-Noir bro, I'm immensely jealous of you guys. God damn you.
Yes.
Well, you know, Capitalist Army is recruiting.
It's true. And the network is recruiting. Take whole corporations of people that think that's cool.
Well, I do laugh because I've been always too lazy to regional trade, but of course I do realize there is value in moving stuff to hubs where people buy, you know, in Nelsit. So I could probably learn a few lessons from you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to oversell our role in it, considering we only had like what, 4 or 5 people out of the 120 man fleet that Tactical Wattage put together. Really, this would not have been possible without faulty support. It wouldn't even have been remotely feasible. But I did put like about 2 months of planning into everything, and all the diplomatic searching and shopping around and making sure everybody was cool with it and we weren't going to get like butt-fucked by Legacy, or like PL wasn't going to decide, oh, an anchoring fort, let's kill that too. So I had to do a lot of like backrooming. So I will take credit for that. Once we got it up, Pravi was pretty immediate. Because Faulty had extracted his caps and supers and all those guys, there was tons of stuff left on the field, a lot of fighters from the dead carriers, wrecks all over the place, and Pravi immediately went to work trying to scavenge the battlefield. This will be my host highlight, I'll just say it now because it might as well. I manned the Fortizar guns for the first time. And that's when it really hit home how cool this was, because I was like trying to swat away these haulers and stuff, and I realized I couldn't, and they just kept coming back, warping away when I started shooting them. I got a couple kills with the point defense battery, that was pretty nice. And then I realized that, oh, I've got a bomb launcher here, and it takes about one bomb to kill one like tick of a fighter, so I just locked up something in the middle of the fighter cluster and started shooting bombs at it over and over and over again, and I would force away some of the haulers that way, but mostly I was working on the fighters, and eventually I think I killed like 50 of them in one shot. Felt great.
It's worth noting that those point defense kills that you got is actually my host highlight. So while Pravi is looting all of these wrecks, I'm still sitting there tethered to the Fortizar in my Battle Rorqual, and I've got a very itchy trigger finger. So at one point, there were two haulers. There was a Prowler and there was a Pro-Raider there that were just sitting there looting wrecks, not cloaked up, not moving around. They didn't have much defense near them. Everybody else was sort of scattered with salvage destroyers, things like that. And then, of course, there was Lumio there and his Tristans. And so I'm like, you know what? Forget this. I warp down to the wreck. And I start shooting at the haulers and shooting at the destroyers and shooting at the Tristans and everything.
He literally goes, Alec, cover me.
I mean, I am on a Fortizar grid, right? So I know that if they drop, first of all, the system Sino jam, so it's going to be difficult to drop caps on me. And second of all, I am on a friendly Fortizar grid. So the worst Pravi could do is bring in a bunch of subcaps and kill me. And that would be pretty fun. But in any case, I warp down, I start shooting them. And it becomes fairly obvious that I can't kill them because my combat warp, it was fit to be like a pseudo fax. And so I didn't have any point, web, scram, nothing. I couldn't tackle stuff down, so I could kill it. But Pravi had just kept bringing in more and more scepters, more and more frigates to keep point on me and things like that. And I was concerned that they were going to bring dictors, or they even did bring dictors. And to top it all off, HTP reached out to Alec and was like, hey, bro, like, we see that Rorqual out there, and you know that we love to kill Rorquals. You may want to, like, rein it in a little bit.
I'm like, Artemis, HTP knows your Rorqual is out there. He's like, yeah, okay, and just keeps doing it. I'm like, ah!
Well, at that point, I'm tackled, right? There's nothing I can do, except for one thing, and that is you remember that the Roracle is the only capital ship that can use a mobile micro jump drive. So I focus shooting anything that has a scram on it, and I launch my mobile micro jump drive. And, of course, freaking immediately Lumio and them start shooting it, right? Because they realize what it is. I'm not sure if they realize it, I could use it, but they realize this is a structure that they could kill as opposed to shooting at a Rourke, which they can't. So they start shooting it. So I'm sitting there counting down the anchor timer, watching the HP drop, hoping that it will anchor in time for me to jump back into tether range of the structure. Eventually it does. I manage to hit the MJD, make it to the structure, and what all of these frigates do is chase me right into point defense range and tackle me again. And then Alex like, I got this, bro. I can clear him off of you. Lights up the point defense and nukes it.
Pop, pop. God, point defense, it's basically a big smart bomb, but I cannot undersell to the audience or oversell to the audience how fun it is to use. Especially with the graphics, it looks like you're unloading a beehive on people. And, you know, like, two-shot interdictors, and it's just great.
In the days of the Fuzzy Claw, before they took away the jump maneuver, the interdiction invulnerability, immunity to bubbles, I've seen many fleets' claws warp in to try and kill Sinos and then just get alphaed off by the point defense and everyone wakes up in Jita.
The crazy thing about point defense is there are some old mechanics when citadels were first introduced. Where first of all, when citadels were introduced, grids were also extended. Grids used to be much, much smaller. Now they're much larger in order to accommodate.
560 kilometers, wasn't it? It's not
that. Yeah, compared to 14K now. And so citadels, what people would do is, oh, and bubbles had 1,000-kilometer range, whereas now they only have 500. So you could anchor bubbles, or bubbles had infinite range, right? So if a bubble was on grid with a thing, it was effective. And you could anchor a citadel 1,000 kilometers away from a gate. And you could fit as many point defenses as you want. There wasn't the limit to one point defense. So what people very quickly realized is you anchor a citadel, particularly a Fortizar, with its highs full of point defense, and then you anchor a bunch of bubbles around it. And what will happen is fleets will go coming through, individual ships, but literally entire fleets were wiped by this. Fleets will go warping through, they'll get caught in the bubbles, and they are sitting their entire fleet stuck in bubbles right in point defense range on a Fortizar, which is fit with like 6 point defenses. And it was just completely broken, the amount of stuff that was dying to these things. And of course, CCP changed it to where first, bubbles were limited to 500 kilometers effective range, and then second, they limit it to where you could only fit 1 point defense to a citadel. So they changed it real quick, but it was super fun while it was a thing.
And just to kind of give for anyone who doesn't actually know what the point defense is, this thing does 500 of each damage type. So each pulse of the smart bomb, which obviously projects out from the structure, deals 2k damage. And if you're talking multiple one of those, it racks up very quickly.
Yeah, the cycle time is relatively fast. At least it feels fast. The frigates, destroyers definitely have an opportunity to respond between the pulses, but they kind of got to be on the ball. If they're a little slow, they do die, as our kill board can attest to. Now, speaking of Lumio, he did attempt to lead a counteroffensive yesterday, which didn't really work out for him. The first Pravi attempt to reinforce the structure was Lumio and another dude in a pair of Dominixes. Kind of worked, because apparently we didn't get the notifications correctly, or maybe we didn't have enough roles distributed to get the notification. We're not quite sure yet. Regardless, when I finally found out about it, they were already quite a ways in. They didn't really have enough damage to stop the timer. But they did have enough damage to put a lot of, like, hurt into it over time. And I guess maybe they had more people at one point and had stopped it. By the time I logged in, we had a lot of time left in the timer and not a lot of shields. It was like 10 minutes left and, I don't know, we must have been down to like 5-10% shield, somewhere in that range. It was pretty low. But it was easy to deal with because it was Dominic's. So I hopped on, popped the point defense, pop, 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 drone's all dead, timer spins back up. Limu gets very huffy and goes back and gets more. And I do the same thing. And then I'm like, well, I wonder if I can really hurt these Dominic's with the fort, like the torpedoes and stuff. So I lock them up and give it a shot. And actually, I'm doing way more damage than I expected. But they still warp off because I didn't have any tacklers handy. Arcantantix was there in an alt, but he was afraid to like actually tackle them because I had the point defense going. I really wish he would have comboed me. I would have been like, yo, Arc, I'll turn it off, man. Go scram those dummies. They came back in battlecruisers, had some Ferroxes and Oracles. Those guys didn't hang around very long at all, but long enough that Capo's army started getting some tacklers together to head their way. As soon as we put frigates into the system, they basically discontinued all attempts. And Lumio sent me very nasty, salty mail. Oh, poor Lumi. There will be no negotiations. Okay, bro. Okay. I didn't even have him on the no dock list either. I just had CVA and
Wait a minute. You let Lumio dock in our Fortizar?
I did. I would have. He didn't even attempt to. Hey, man, I give everybody a chance. But now he doesn't want to enjoy the luxuries of our open concept Fortizar. With our reclaimed wood stabilizer beams in the ceiling. Exposed red brick. Very modern hardwood floor. Brand new. New kitchen. No, not into it? Okay. So I was like, alright, fine. Add them to the no-doc list. Kept messing with them for like another 15-20 minutes. Capitalist Army showed up again in a small tackle fleet. And that was the end of that. And that's pretty much it. I fairly, frankly, expected them to reinforce it as soon as their European time zone came on. But it just didn't happen. So, I don't know, we're going to keep an eye on it, but it seems like things might just kind of stabilize a little earlier than we thought, which is cool. And we're going to continue stocking the market over the next couple days. It's still signer jammed, so it's making that a little harder, but we are working around it. And, That's it. Rest of Eve has been very supportive. I've gotten so many emails and like Discord PMs of people who are like, oh my god, this is so cool. How can we help? How did you do this? What's the deal with the Fortizar? I heard about that. What's the plan? Do you need help defending it? Do you need help selling it? Or like selling stuff out of it? I'm like, can anyone dock there, really? I'm like, yep. Artemis, you're in Tucking Stations. You invited me onto the show. Like, what was the response from Tucking Station fans? What's been your sense of the community's response?
So at first, everyone was like, "Is Pravi getting invaded again?" That was the initial response.
Yep, got course, a lot of that.
They're all super hesitant because anytime an invasion starts, the first thing out of the invading party's mouth is, "This is not an invasion." So everybody's asking, is this an invasion? We're sitting there saying, no, this isn't an invasion. And everybody's sitting there, arms crossed, sort of, yeah, sure. Totally not an invasion. You just anchored a Fortizar in their staging system. Right. But eventually, we explained, like, no, we did this in NTAG 6 too, and yada, yada, yada. So everybody was like, whoa, that's pretty freaking cool. Like, the Pravi is going to be fun. Everybody was super on board with, like, you explained how this has been a goal for you. Everybody was super supportive of that. Like, I think in general, the Eve community is happy because interesting things are happening in Eve. We'll have to see sort of where this goes as far as content generation is concerned, how the market starts to tick up. There are a lot of people interested in the market and how it's seeded, things like that. So we'll see where it goes. But generally, everyone except for Pravi is happy.
Which is cool. And I like that see where it goes kind of aspect to it. It's not like I had I don't even still have a grand strategy of like, okay, we got the Fortizar up. Now this is the next step. To me, getting the Fortizar up was the step. Like, it's a goal, but an achievement that can't be erased even if the thing dies. So, like, I did it. We're done. We're good. I want to get this market set up. I want to keep the market going. I want to base out of the station and have fun. And I really want to see what the EVE community decides to do with it. This is really, I mean, it's a goal of mine, but like the value is really for the EVE community and wouldn't it have been possible to achieve without the support of the community. So this is going to make one of EVE's most interesting regions more interesting. Not all the fun content is in Delve. Like this will be great. And the interest that it's generated, and a couple people have talked to me about things they might want to do with the market or staging out of it. Some really interesting possibilities could come out of this. And I just kind of want to, you know, sit back and see what EVE does with this thing. It's interesting. It's an oddity. I don't think anyone that I know of has anchored a hostile freeport in an established empire's like headquarters system before.
There was.
And let's see what happens with it.
Phoebe Freeport Republic, back when Freeport yes. Nullsec stations was a thing.
Yes, you are correct. Phoebe Freeport Republic definitely pioneered.
But I do have a bit of a complaint with your statement, and that is that you implied that Delve is the place to go for fun and EVE right now, but I'm sitting here watching Z-Kill, and Perimeter looks like the place to be for fun and EVE right now.
It depends on what you want by fun.
Well, that's a good transition to our next story, Artemis. Talk about what's going on in HiSec.
I'm going to let Lave talk about it, because like Lave is our eyes on the ground right now. Do you still have a tune in there? What's going on?
I do. I mean, at the very start of this podcast, the Keepstar belonging to Test and Perimeter System has been under attack by Horde and NC and affiliated allies. It looks like Test initially defended with Dominexes and Nestors, which got promptly chewed up. Time dilation in Perimeter has pretty much been almost maxed for most of this fight. The Keepstar is currently paused and is around about a third of its shield left, over 6 minutes left on the timer. Other systems around Jita are also tie-dyed to hell, so Nyabina, for example, was maxed in tie-dye. Jita is obviously unaffected because it runs on its own hardware. In terms of what's going on right now, obviously Horde and NC remain. Looks like Test came out in their own Ferexes, so it turned into a Ferex on Ferex Brawl. But obviously due to the time die, not actually as much time has passed here as you might expect, and it's still happening in very slow motion.
Yeah.
But so it looks like at this time, given that obviously the cheapest market is legitimately a system away from you, it looks like they'll probably reinforce it on this timer, given the numbers.
At the moment, if the battle report can be trusted, which this is HiSec and mechanics are funky, and so sides are a bit difficult to parse, but it looks like the defenders, Test, Alliance, and Co. have lost a little over 22.5 billion right now, and NC Dot, Horde, and all their bros have lost almost 7 billion right now. But killmails are just constantly streaming in. So this is going to be a fight that continues to happen. As Lave said, there's still a third of the shield timer on this Keepstar. And it's worth noting, if this does get reinforced, service modules, so this is the market, the cloning bay, any sort of manufacturing stuff, that stuff gets disabled in armor reinforcement. So tomorrow or the next day, whenever this thing comes out of its reinforcement, there is going to be a massive fight if this does get reinforced.
Yeah, this is a continuation of a story that we've been following on the show for a little bit now. The war over the HiSec market hubs. Basically, Test and Horde, PanFam and Legacy, kind of waging this proxy war in HiSec over control of these markets. Test opening the salvo by taking out Horde's market, putting their own down. Horde firing back with dropping new competing markets and undercutting them on taxes, and now directly attacking their Test's market stuff. It's really interesting. I can't think of another time that this has really happened where two Nullsec powers, I mean, yeah, they've declared war on each other before, but never to this degree or this level of strategic importance have been fighting in HiSec instead of Nullsec. Test had tried an Nullsec deployment recently and basically effectively canceled it after a little less than a week. They're still doing some roam ops up there, but no serious strategic fights. They kind of made a mistake and lost a good chunk of their capitals. And I think they're like, okay, let's rethink this.
You brought capitals to a super capital fight.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the challenge, really, when you're, at least the way EVE is working now, people seem to not have much of a problem deploying massive numbers of capital ships across the game. Many fewer alliances are willing to move their super capitals across the game, either because it's inconvenient or because they don't want to leave their own players at home unprotected by a super capital umbrella, like their Rorquals and stuff. If you're not willing to bring the supers and you're going to shoot somebody in the backyard, they do have their supers. And so you're putting yourself at this extreme disadvantage if your opponent is willing to commit them. And PanFam is, generally speaking, willing to commit them.
It's also more dangerous to move super capitals these days. I mean, when you talk about groups like, say, Ivana or Wrecking Crew, who are seasoned capital hunters, moving a super capital through anywhere near them is very tricky. I mean, just this evening, randomly, an Aeon was tackled by a group, not by Shadow Cartel, but by a group near us. It looks like he was a returning player, and rather than go down the ship, he promptly ejected, and thenceforth the Aeon was stolen.
Nice.
And with all the Tether changes itself, you know, in days gone by, you could have capitals with full racks of cap recharges, and they could cross EVE in about 10 minutes, the entire map. And then obviously the Citadels came in and they were still a bit safe. Now they introduced the delay. And suddenly it's not so safe anymore for super capitals.
I mean, even still, quite often I've flown with Bomber Spar, but not so for the last probably about 2 months. But there was a few months before that when I did. And, you know, we're probably catching a super once every, you know, once a week, give or take. You know, it was always the case. You were sitting there patient and then it's like, wow, jump the wormhole. But of course, if it was goons and then they had the home defence, you know, there were Moloks jumping in and stuff like that. But it was still fun nonetheless. And yeah, sometimes guys would be bad and you would get them.
Well, we're going to keep an eye on this situation. As Artemis said, if this thing does indeed get reinforced, which, you know, from Lay's reporting, it sounds like that's going to happen. There is going to be a fairly large fight for it tomorrow. And if that is successful, another fight following week. We will follow up on this story on the next show to let you guys know how things turned out and what other developments have happened in the ongoing Legacy PanFam. It's not even a cold war. It's like a continually hot war that just gets a little hotter or a little cooler depending on what's going on. This is certainly heating up in HiSec. I want to transition real quick to something going on in our backyard, Scalding Pass. We've been covering this story over the past couple episodes as Tri has gotten kicked out of Scalding Pass by Scourge. Scourge really establishing themselves in Tri's space now. The next development is that some of the local alliances that Scourge has been trying to push out to establish rental space for themselves, now they're pushing back. And there are a number of Scourge systems reinforced on Dotland right now. A little unclear how intensely Scourge is going to be contesting these, to what degree they care. They have been sort of sowing their oats around the wider EVE, and Scourge never really that invested in being a Sov-holding alliance. We'll see how this goes. Certainly, if they did commit to a defense, I think the local alliances would be hard-pressed to overcome them. But you never know. It could be a fairly even fight, depending on the time zone. Also, in Scalding Pass and nearby Curse, Bright Side of Death versus Fraternity continues to go on. We had suggested in a previous episode that BSOD had signed some kind of agreement with them to withdraw. Either that was a total rumor or it's not happening at all. The fighting still continues. And Brightside showing a lot of tenacity defending their space and structures. Fraternity, despite being a much larger alliance, is not making the progress you would expect them to make. Certainly, you know, if you just went by the numbers, this fight should have been long over. So, major props to B-Side, who I've flown with a couple times in Great Wildlands and Scalding Pass. They are very excellent PvPers and good guys. Fraternity, also interesting opponents, but clearly, BSOD showing a lot of heart here. And Fraternity, I don't know if it's the case they're distracted or for whatever reason unwilling to commit their full resources, or if this really is the strongest they can perform without being backed up by another alliance. In most of their wars, they've been supported by Tri, and I would presume had access to Tri FCs and Tri planning and Tri super capital resources. This could be the first obstacle they have really had truly on their own since they took their space in the first place a couple years back. Artemis or Boom Boom, any thoughts on the Scalding Pass stuff? I know it's a little outside your wheelhouse, but does this even get to your ears? It's kind of happening pretty far away from you guys.
Well, the Tri stuff, Arrow of Apollo was in Shadow Cartel. I believe he's one of the main FCs now. I mean, he was one of the guys that there's always the debate about whether people should be critical of people in the fleet if they're being bad or not. I've never had a problem with it personally. I know I'm deviating slightly from the question you asked, but I enjoy flying on drum. And, you know, I think when people are getting mad in fleet when stuff's going wrong, it's a good motivation to basically. In terms of the wider picture, I'm kind of sitting on the fence in that, well, I don't have the wider involvement in it, but I don't know.
All right, well, we're going to give a shout out to our sponsor, Eve Onion. They have a huge story, speaking of top stories. Walking in Stations, the movie. CCP has revealed a upcoming feature-length film called Walking in Stations. You know, famously, we have the captain's quarters and the door that goes nowhere. Well, that door is being opened, and very fittingly for our characters being trapped in a room for so long, they have tapped, famous writer, director, and actor Tommy Wiseau to helm this film, which is really interesting but exciting choice. I'm really interested to see what he can do with this and get, you know, real human emotion out of EVE Online. For more information on this story exclusively, go to EVEonion.com. EVEonion.com. We break the news in EVE Online.
I mean, I think on the back of that, if you watch the EVE Israel video, you know, you generally connect. It's a good video to watch. You connect with emotions. And I've seen the most recent one where they put more voiceover where, you know, people are obviously going more madder. Like, EVE, this is really EVE or whatever. But it's interesting. That film will be great.
Yeah, I think Tommy Wiseau could really capture the essence of EVE, you know.
But the funny thing is when Star Wars comes out next year or this year, you know, if you actually played that EVE Israel thing in the cinema, how many more nerds would actually come and join EVE? But albeit it would cost quite a bit. I don't think CCP would commit the budget for that. But
yeah, I agree. If they did, it'd probably change the game. And for the better.
For any of our listeners who are sitting there thinking, I have no idea who Tommy Wiseau is, so I'm going to have to Google this now. You're not alone.
You don't know Tommy Wiseau, Artemis?
Never heard of him.
The Room?
That is a place in, like, space somewhere, I'm assuming.
Oh my god. It's one of the famous independent movies of all time. One of the most famous.
But I'm in a room.
I'm in a room, too.
There was a recent major motion picture about the creation of The Room called The Disaster Artist. Have you heard or seen of that?
Nope.
Okay, Art. Well, in addition to your anime homework, you're going to go watch The Room.
Oh, boy.
This is a little off, but Artemis, speaking of anime, would you like to give an update to the audience? I think it's been about a month since we've checked in with you. How is your adventure into weeb subculture going?
As I understand it, I have worked my way through years of Alex pruning and really cultivating a collection of quality material. And so far, most of it's been pretty good. I have to say, if I were to recommend one to anyone, start with One Punch Man. That's pretty fantastic. If superheroes aren't your thing, go with Attack on Titan. And once you're sort of comfortable with the genre, so far, my favorite has been Code Geass. That is where I'm at so far. At the moment, I'm going through Ruby and Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood at the same time because I can't decide which one I enjoy more. So that's pretty fun. But that's where I'm at. I'm still not comfortable with the genre. Recently, Alec introduced me to the fact that there's this thing called magical girl genre or subgenre, I suppose. That freaking creeps me out. Like, I don't know how in the world people watch that nonsense.
It creeps you out. Some of the most wholesome anime on the planet.
Okay. Oh, let me rephrase. The anime, the wholesomeness of the show isn't the creepy part. It's all of the neckbeards at home watching the wholesomeness of the show that creeps me out.
Yeah, the worst part of anime really is the fans. We're the worst. I'm not going to deny that one.
Why I remain completely disconnected from the culture surrounding the content.
It's for the
highly
best.
Highly recommended.
Yeah.
To be fair, you sound like you're already far more experienced than I am, so I'll defer to you on your expertise on this.
I mean, he's not exaggerating. I've given him, like... I've watched a lot of anime in my life, for better or worse. I've given Artemis, like, all the ones I could in good conscience recommend as either actually good or, if not good, at least novel and interesting and worth a watch. And he has, like, binged all of them in amazing amounts of time. So,
if binge watching was a competitive sport, I would be a world-class athlete.
I don't even know what to give him at this point. I'm looking for new stuff myself. I tried to tell him about JoJo. He watched a few episodes, is my understanding, and could not get through it. So, not for him. I'm still working my way through. I'm in, like, the beginning part of season 3 right now.
Can I ask, so Lave and Boom Boom, you guys are from UK and Scotland, respectively, right? Is anime a thing there? Like, do people watch it? Like, are weebs a significant subculture like they are over in the US?
I don't think the term weeb is particularly significant. I mean, anime exists, sure, and it's on cartoon channels. You know, certain ones like that will be out there. I was in Waterstones today, and there's a whole anime section. The only anime I can really say I've ever really watched is Bleach. And that was because when I was back in university, the martial arts jiu-jitsu club I was at, they had lots of people there who loved it. So, of course, we all grew into it, which is great.
Sure. I mean, weeaboo was British slang for anime fan, which is where weeb has come from.
In terms of myself, I mean, not really. Waifu was a term I learned recently about, you know, pillows or whatever like that as well. But I suppose being in the noir, there was always a, there was a My Little Pony thing, was a Rainbow Dash, or whatever. I can't really remember, but
Best Pony, yes, go on. He knows what's going on. Rainbow Dash, Best Pony.
I would like to point out that when Alec gave me the list of quality things to watch, My Little Pony was not on that list.
Well, it's not considered an anime proper. I definitely recommend watching it end to end.
Alec, I still have memories of when you came to the My Little Pony talk for Mercenary Academy.
I put that out on YouTube, you know.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, if you guys want to learn how to get good at Eve, for reals, not a troll, check out my YouTube channel, the My Little Pony seminar that I gave for Noir Academy. Groundbreaking, eye-opening, legit, was kind of a dare by Cassidy. Like, yo, Alec, you should do a whole seminar on My Little Pony. Oh, speaking of JoJo. Hey! That is my ringtone.
Rest in peace, headphone listeners.
So that happened. I did this whole thing, and he was like, I really want you to do this. And I said, fine, I'll do it if you post an op for it. I never thought he would, but he did. And so I was like, well, okay. I prepared like a whole thing. And by whole thing, I mean a very, very short outline. It wound up being like less than half a page worth of notes, but I talked for a good 30 minutes about it. And maybe 5 to 10 minutes in, after I got explaining the entire plot and world of the show, one of the students piped up with a very good question. It's like, is this really going to be about My Little Pony? I was like, yeah, was I not clear? He's like, I thought you were kidding. And I was like, well, I kind of was till Artemis put this up, but we're here now.
Cassidy, you mean?
Yes, excuse me, Cassidy.
Completely unaffiliated with this monstrosity that I could not
There were tears of joy from the instructors.
I found the recording, I cut it, I put it into YouTube, and is there for all posterity now. Leaked elite training video. Alright, let's get into some highlights. Artemis and I already gave ours. Lave, what was the coolest thing you've done in EVE in the past 2 weeks?
A bit of triple boxing madness. Triple boxing being the term for having three clients open simultaneously, controlling three characters simultaneously. It does get quite tricky depending on what you have. In this particular engagement, I was triple boxing a Vengeance and two 10NN deacons. These are deacons with cruiser-sized afterburners as Logi. So I was making up two-thirds of the Logi wing for basically a retribution gang, and we were going to go and kill some guys who were shooting some of our Pocos, but timers were all wrong, so we didn't get there, and we tackle a Kronos. So the Kronos kind of bounces a few times on gates before we aggress him, and the fight's on. Now, the Kronos is a Marauder. And a Marauder has a Bastion mode, which means they basically God tank. And this thing was Bling tanked. It was a 3 billion thick Kronos. So he was tanking quite nicely. We were tanking quite nicely in return. About halfway into the fight, a T3D gang with logistics come crashing through the enemy side to try and take it out, to try and free us off the Kronos. So we kind of mince through them. We killed a Kronos basically through the fact that he runs out of cap charges, and he brings in a hauler to try and resupply his cap charges, but we blow that up so he can't charge and he dies. But that was quite an experience of managing the deacons plus the Vengeance. And I know that for a fact that my deacons both got primed at some point by either the T3Ds that came in or the Kronos, which was very confused why he couldn't slow down my deacon or hit it. That was fun, and quite a lot of micromanagement given the fact that we were taking gate guns the whole time.
Yeah, that looks pretty cool. I mean, what a great kill to come away with as a frigate gang, a friggin' Marauder. Delish. Boom Boom, what about you? What's the coolest thing you've done in EVE past two weeks?
I was thinking about that when Leviathan was saying that, and I'm struggling away, but what I would actually say was, when we killed a structure tonight, I looked at the kill boards and then actually realised I'd flown last night in a Punisher and I couldn't remember doing it because I was so drunk. So not really something I should be too proud of, because it was 1 o'clock in the morning, but I'm like, wow, I can't actually remember that. But wow, you know, that's probably about the most I can be proud of. But what I would like to say as well is, I do remember being back in Noir when we did the low-sec contract and Leviathan's set repair thing, where we went to nullsec and we were hitting a rat every like 40 seconds or something. That was absolutely amazing.
Oh yeah, I remember that. It was the old style when you rep your sec status up by nuking a rat and then changing system, thereby forcing a session change.
Yeah. Is that really a thing?
It's like completely like revolutionary, like, you know.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so to summarize the highlight of, I've been slowly progressively getting drunk as this has been going on, but so last night I shot things and I can't remember doing it, but alas, I had fun.
All right, and finally some shout-outs. Like I said, shout-outs to Faulty7, shout-outs to Ariel Rin, shout-outs to Otto Bismarck, shout-outs to every pilot from Tactical Voltage / Wattage that showed up to support R4 as our going down. I'm really excited to keep working with you guys to see where this goes. It's going to be exciting. Artemis?
My shout out goes to Conventia for being the hero jump freighter pilot that we needed in order to make the Fortis R anchoring happen.
I feel like it's some of a model here, but I'd thank and just want to give a shout out to Arky and the Australians who've been in Noir all this time. And in true keeping with Providence, they made R3 one of the entrances to Providence their home for so many years, and I hope that continues.
I hate to disappoint you, but it appears that Ark has set his sights on camping in 9UI now, so R3 will be a little bit safer, but 9UI on the other hand.
Oh, the bodies. He'll start stacking them, no doubt.
Let the bodies hit the floor.
All right, guys, that is it.
Whoa!
Oh, excuse me. Yes, Lave and Boom.
Alex and Tinid as well. You know, thank you for you guys introducing me to PvP. Thank you to the community, Shadow Cartel, for obviously tolerating me. I'm one of the worst drunks in Eve. The community in general, thank you.
Alrighty. Now that's it.
This Keepstar still at like 20%, 25% shield or something. I'm just going to leave this for now.
Is the timer still going?
It's still paused at 6:37, and there's still two Ferrix fleets just lagging, fighting each other out of it.
Based on the kill mills that are loading, it looks like Tess have come back with their Ferrox fleet and are starting to win, so that they're trading more effectively than Horde and NC. But I'm not. Because you also have to remember that Horde and NC have to keep this timer paused, have to keep doing damage to the Keepstar. So even if they have similar numbers of Ferroxes, they can only harness this portion of that fleet to actually fight with Test. So by the looks of things, that is allowing Test to trade better, and so Test may actually save this timer.
Yeah, being next to Jita will always help this. I mean, I probably just literally just coming in and out of ships. Good time to be selling Ferroxes.
Indeedy. Speaking of selling Ferroxes, we should put some Ferroxes up on our new market. And if anyone else would like to put Ferroxes up on our new market, you can do so right now. The 9UI Providence Black Market, open for business, open for investment. It's going to be great. Be the engine of content in EVE and put stuff up on the 9UI market.
I was going to say, that thing's in Black Ops Ranger for Sweeper, which is 4 jumps from a Mar. So you just Black Ops over a load of blockade runners.
Yep, absolutely. And we're going to be installing more services as well, including manufacturing. So if you can't ship in a whole battleship, you could ship in the minerals for it and then build it on site.
We need to get a reprocessing race, so you can just ship in compressed ore and then reprocess it instead of shipping in the minerals.
You can do that too. We'll have a full luxury service here. Yeah, and speaking of the Pravi deployment, not only is the Capitalist Army recruiting, but the network, our alliance, is recruiting. If you thought Providence was cool, and like what we've been talking about on this show is really awesome, unique thing to do in EVE, considering being a part of the network. That's what our alliance is all about. This was kind of our first, and to be honest, probably going to be our crowning achievement, but who knows going forward. I'd like to do more stuff like sponsoring the NPSI community, sponsoring tournaments, getting more involved in content generation, and connecting EVE players with the best stuff to do in EVE. And if you like that and you like small gang PvP, please consider joining the network. And with that, we will leave you guys. Wherever you are in the game, good hunting, listeners.
Although the best hunting is to be found out of the black market in Providence.